I'm Victor Ritchie from Any Given Sin, and I'm talking rock with Dave and Shane.
Hey, everybody, this is Joel Linter.
Hi, everybody. This is Rob Halford.
The Rudy Sergeant.
Hey, this is Steve Hackett.
Hey, folks, this is Rick Emmett of Triumph, and we're talking rock with Dave and Shane.
Man, we're all fired up here. Victor from Any Given Sin. And, you know, we were checking out some of the stuff you guys have out right now. And I know you guys have been playing some shows and you're just killing it. You know, what's going on, man? I mean, how you doing? How's it, you know, with this latest single that's out right now? I mean, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? How jazzed are you, man?
Pretty jazzed, Brett. We got, you know, an album coming out. We've got some really good touring coming out to support that. Coming up, we've got, like we said, the single coming out, got a lot of positive feedback from it. So, I mean, everything's moving, you know, down the river like we'd like it to see, you know.
You guys are from Southern Maryland scene. Are there any bands that really influenced you, got you into this whole mess called music?
Yeah, so myself personally, I'm from the western side of Virginia, the rest of the band's from down there. For me, it wasn't really Southern Maryland bands. I started off playing bluegrass, you know, up here in the mountains, you know, picking and stuff. And that started me on music. And then once I hit about teenage years, you know, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, the whole, you know, Seattle stuff. I was a 90s kid. So that was like, you know, Chris Cornell was my vocal, you know, idol. So that was kind of my path.
Talking with Victor, Any Given Sin, the album War Within in stores August 4th, available on CD, transparent vinyl and digital. Man, we love vinyl, Shane. You know we love vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
Calm Before the Storm is out right now, and I think you got another single. They're still syncing. I mean, you guys got so much stuff out. What's, you know, talk about the creative process with this record, like how you guys approached it.
So for us, we kind of started off doing the single thing. We were unsigned up until about a year and a half ago. So Mascot will be putting this album out with us. But most of the songs on the album were singles we had started off. We just kind of wrote them together. The first three singles we put out were the first three songs we wrote together. And so that kind of just, we found that was cheaper. We found that we were getting more bang for our buck to go the single route being unsigned, kind of coming up. So that's where this record started. I got a feeling the next record is going to be a little bit more condensed and into one creative idea, but this was kind of a long process of years put together. And you kind of see our transformation as we go through and we're writing more together and the band was being developed with this album, I think.
Yeah.
How did the whole COVID experience affect? I mean, I know a lot of these songs, some of these songs were 2018, 2019, 2021. How did that whole mess affect, the creative process?
We kept, luckily we lived pretty close together so we could keep writing. We thought it was going to ruin us because we had just had Dynamite on Octane. It did really well. We just put out Another Life, which is a single. It did pretty well. We thought we're about to hit some tours, and then COVID hit and shut everything down. So we were like, I don't know what's going to happen. So we kept writing. We wrote the song Insidious. We put that out during the pandemic. Ended up doing real well on Octane 2. I think it was like number one's biggins for a couple of weeks. And so we kept trying to do it, you know, so, like every other band, we're just fighting through it, but you know, we came out unscathed-ish, you know?
Yeah. Talking about, so you were talking about 2021. I mean, just going through some of the numbers here, it looks like things really were taking off. Like Another Life generated what, north of 5.2 million Spotify streams, Dynamite 4.5 on Spotify, Dynamite and Insidious both cracking the top 40 on the active rock radio, in addition to, as you said, climbing to number one on Sirius XM. You know, what do you make of, like, I mean, with so many sources to access music now, how critical is that? You got Spotify, you got, you know, Sirius XM, you got so many other channels. I mean, it must make your head spin.
It does. It's, you definitely need some help, you know, in this sector, because it's just so much, and you have algorithms and all these things that just, like, I don't understand it, a lot of it. So reaching out to other people who do understand those sorts of things are great, but I think all of them are vitally important because it's a place to get the music from, you know. So each spin matters, each view matters, each stream matters, wherever it's coming from. Try to get your music on all of them. You never know which one's going to be the next Spotify or the next, you know, YouTube or whatever. So yeah. I think it's a good thing.
Does it kind of tick you off? Like, what are your thoughts on Spotify? Does it kind of tick you off that those kind of numbers that you guys have already generated on just those three singles alone? I mean, that would make you a great deal of money. I know Spotify is not exactly tossing money out. Would you like to see some kind of reform in that part of the streaming service industry?
I'd love to see like a musicians union. So there's so many things, you know, like the streaming idea. There's merch percentages you give to venues, and then there's no consistency in that, in my opinion, shouldn't have it at all. But these are all things that I think, if they're going to change, it's going to take like musicians coming together in a really big way, especially your top performing artists and things, saying no, and kind of building a coalition. Or so I don't know what it'd look like, and I don't know how you'd go about it policy wise or whatnot. But yes, I would love to see something where we have a little bit more power in some of these realms.
Yeah. You know, you guys being from Maryland, and you guys all still live pretty close together. I mean, how important is that, you know, and keep that nucleus going? You know, I mean, I know some bands, as they spread out literally, you know, right. People live across, you know, hell, Shane and I, we're not in a band, we live, you know, he's in Philly, I'm in, you know, Detroit, know, how does that, you know, does that help? It must help things, right? You know, being so close together still and just being able to, I assume, meet in person and jam and work on ideas versus just emailing stuff, or maybe a little bit of both, right?
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit, I think it's a double-edged sword. It's great to all live together. Also, if, you know, some members of your band had to move, and we didn't have this technology ability to do it, then they would be out of the band and you'd be looking for another person. You know what I mean? So it's like, to me, it's going both ways. You can have your good sides, your bad sides. I think it helps us because we can, you know, I could go over there in the weekend and we can all sit together and write a song or whatever we're going to do, work on whatever. I think it expedites the process, definitely. But it also allows you to have members in your band you might not have had before too. You know, I guess it all just depends.
Yeah.
What's that songwriting process with you guys, since you guys are so close? How does it work out? Like, who comes up with ideas?
So when we first started, like, kind of how most of these singles got written is me and the guitarist Mike would usually sit down a lot. Rich did all the, like, the Dynamite song piano parts, a lot of the background stuff. So it's the music's kind of collabed between the band, and then I usually like to write the lyrics and lyric melodies myself, if I can, probably 90% of the time. So we kind of have our own little roles, and then we kind of just try to put it together. And then we have our producers who come in and play their parts as well once we go to record it and really start delving deep. But I'd say we kind of stick to our roles a bit and let each other's expertise kind of do their thing.
What do you look for in a producer? I mean, you guys kind of know what you want musically, and what's that process like, looking for a producer and kind of laying it all down?
Yeah, so we use pretty much all of our songs. We've used Chris Dawson from Mephotic Studios. He's out of Kansas. Yeah. He's great. I've known Chris for years and years, so we already had a relationship together. So it was easy to work together. He'll tell you the truth. He'll tell you something sucks. He'll tell you, you know, you need to do better than that, you know. So all those things matter. And plus, he just has, like, to me, just a great – he isn't thinking about the things we're thinking about, and that's why we want to bring somebody else in. Look at all the perspectives we're not. I think that's what makes a good producer, in my opinion.
Wow. I mean, you guys have been at it since 2015. I know that there are a few switches in there with lineup, but I mean, do you kind of feel like you're up against it sometimes with the way that this business is structured? I mean, would you like to see, I kind of asked this before, but would you like to see, I don't want to see bands like yours go away is basically what it comes down to. And I fear that that's going to happen a lot. Do you think that is going to go that direction if we don't change here soon?
I got a feeling that could happen. Everything's getting so spread out. You know what I mean? It's very hard to just hone directly in on something that's going to be financially successful, you know, like it used to be. And so the model has got to change. And again, I'm not the guy probably to come up with the solution to it, but I would agree that there's definitely a problem, and it's going to cause a lot of bands to go bankrupt and you know, come in and come out. You know, the best they're going to do the best they can, but it is what it is, the nature of the beast.
Yeah. It's such a wild, like, crazy frontier right now. I mean, you know, it's like we want, you know, Gene Simmons always talks about, you know, rock is dead. And I think he was talking about the old industry and all that stuff, you know, and it's the legendary quote we think about a lot. But you guys are proving that that's not true. And I just think, you know, now bands like, you know, what you guys are doing, like, now's the time. You guys are forging a whole new frontier, man. And it's awesome. I think we're going to look back at what you guys are doing, and it's going to be like, this was a major moment in the evolution of rock music. I mean, do you feel like you're kind of on the cusp of that? You know, it's got to be pretty cool.
I'll be honest. I feel like I'm another cog in the wheel, you know, just I'm on the stern of the ship, just holding on during the hurricane. You know what I mean? And we're just trying to do it ourselves. I really appreciate you saying that. That's awesome. I hope that's not the case for us. I really do. Yeah, thank you for that. Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of times from my perspective, I'm just hanging on for dear life, you know, just trying to steer the ship wherever we can not run aground on it, you know. So, but yes, I hope that becomes the case.
Do you guys all have other forms of work, or is this it? Are you guys all in on this?
No, we'd love to be completely all in, but it's hard not to work a day job too. You know what I mean? We've got to come back off the road. We're just not making enough to completely do this. So we've all taken, you know, none of us have like a completely full-time job. We have to be able to roll moment's notice for 3 months and stuff like that. So everybody's doing whatever they can do. But yeah.
Is there one gig that's been life-changing, or one venue, you know, like if you can pinpoint one or at least a couple that have just blown your mind?
There was some really cool play. It wasn't with this band. I got to play. See, I'm an East Coast guy. So like the Whiskey A Go-Go was the, you know, the iconic place always at that West Coast. You know what I mean? I got to play that back in 2015 with on a Buck Cherry tour. And so that was really cool. I really liked that. And we were out on tour. That was like one of my first tours I'd ever did. So I think that really, there's something about that venue, being in that venue and being on tour for like the first time. It was like, all right, this is what I want to do, you know? So that was pretty neat. We got to play Toots Ballroom, or Kane's Ballroom in Oklahoma. There was a lot of history there, like early Hank Williams, all the early country stars and stuff, but they all went through here, and it's just a bunch of history. So that was a really cool play too.
Yeah. Anything? Have you played Philly yet?
We've played outside of Philly in the suburbs. I'm forgetting the name of the venue, but not dead in the city yet now.
Yeah, maybe it was Glenside, but
I was gonna say Keswick or something.
how was it touring with Josh? Was he a nice mentor? Was it a lot of fun working? We talked to him a couple of weeks ago. We just love the guy.
Yeah. This is a long time ago. He was, everybody in the band was really nice. They were really cool. Their crew was awesome. I didn't know what to expect, but they were really awesome for being who they were and us being who we were and things like that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, man. You guys, right now, you're going to be out with, you know, Drowning Pool, Adelita's Way, you know, Saliva. I mean, this is the Snafu Litour. My French is terrible. Snafu.
Snafu Litour.
Snafu Litour.
I can't even pronounce that one song, A Tout Le Monde by Megadeth. I always get that wrong. Let's see, July 6th through 8th. Summerfest, third week at Milwaukee Summerfest, July 14th, Everclear, man, awesome. I mean, and Saliva at the Grand Event Center at the Golden Nugget, Puddle of Mud. I mean, you know, you got some 90s in there, early 2000s. Like, what, you know, does it kind of trip you out? Like, I mean, for me, you know, those were the bands when I was in college. And, you know, that's like, that was like that one of those ultimate eras of rock and roll for me, you know, like that I lived, you know. I mean, maybe being a little bit of a younger guy, and probably for you too, you know, being a younger guy yourself. So, to share the stage with those guys, I mean, you know, what's that feel like? You're gonna feel like, man.
It's pretty awesome. You know, you don't always know what to do because, like you say, they're like, these are guys I listened to when I was like wanting to do this. You know what I mean? You know, when I was a teenager, and so sometimes you're not. I won't say starstruck, but I'm like, they wouldn't want to talk to me. They wouldn't want to talk to me. You know what I mean? So you're like timid and afraid. It's like three shows in before you start like getting with people. But what I've noticed is everybody's just normal people, and they, you know. They're willing to give advice. They're willing to say, hey, you know, so it's a cool little community that gets in there. I'm not saying that anybody that's had an experience that was bad is incorrect, but most of my experiences have been positive with people, you know, icons and things that I've gotten to meet.
Totally.
You have a very, very rich soulful voice. You talked about Alice in Chains. Was Lane, was he a big part of your life growing up, coming up, and formative in the way that you approach songs?
Yeah, I mean, Alice in Chains was one of my more favorite bands of that era, I'd say, along with Soundgarden and pretty much anything Chris Cornell did. Yeah. I just really liked the more, I don't know how to say this exactly, but like lyrically back in the 90s, something about it was like more poetic to me than some of the progressions have gone on. Not right, wrong, or indifferent, but I just wanted to write like that. And so I've kind of tried to do that as I've went on too. So I'd say that definitely there's writing influence from that era. And I think how a lot of them tried to write.
Yeah, it's such a time that was like, you know, we haven't seen anything like that. I mean, with that whole 91 year and all of that, I mean, one of the most iconic parts of that. I mean, what is there, like, what, you know, what other influences do you have? I mean, I'm still trying to process, you talked about like bluegrass, you know, coming from a bluegrass background. How do you make that transition into the rock and roll thing?
It was kind of like, I listened to everything. I listened to hip hop. I listened to, you know, jazz. I've listened to blues. I like a lot of music. I always felt that like this genre was like, this was mine. This is the one that, you know, I'm most comfortable in. But all those influences can come into play a little bit. Or you try to bring them in as much as you can. I don't know. I don't really have a set way that I look at music in general. Like, I'm just like, if it's good, I like it. But transition wise, like, I kind of looked at it as music's music. I'm just playing this one now, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Well, you talk about, it's in the bio, your bio, you talk about this communal catharsis that you try to bring to fans, something similar to what Chris and Lane brought to the table. You're always trying to sort of get it out, but also help people in the way that you write stuff.
100%. I kind of look at writing music as like, you take something that's inside of you that was really bad, really hurting you. And when you write a song, you physically take it out of your body and you put it there and it goes away from you. You know what I mean? And I think when people listen to music, it does the same thing. It kind of, you put all that into this other, you're sharing it with everybody else that's hearing this and the writer who wrote it. And so you kind of have a community in the thoughts that you have. In the whatever, if it's pain, anguish, joy, whatever it might be, you know, you're kind of putting that out together, and that's what music is, and what I think fans and artists should be. You know, we're kind of a small community in themselves, and our Any Given Sinners group is kind of like that. We have this awesome fan group that just they all show up, they all know each other, they go to the UK and visit each other. You know what I mean? They're all over the place.
Wow.
And it's really cool. It's really cool to see, and I'm just grateful that it somehow landed, that we're somehow the seesaw of this whole thing, you know. It's really awesome.
Yeah. We're talking with Any Given Sin, the band. Victor Ritchie, vocalist, is joining us. The full band, Mike Connor, Rick Stevenson, and Mike Showalter, out of Maryland. You know, looking at the social media handles here, I mean, Facebook, USIN, AGS, that's pretty cool. Any Given Sin Official on Instagram, Any Given Sin Band on Twitter. You know, talking about that community and people kind of getting the word out and flying, you know, to the UK or to different places to see you guys. You know, what do you think? I mean, the role of social media, like how critical is that, you know? And especially, I imagine during the pandemic, it must have been like just huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost, you almost just can't do it. You can't not do it. You know what I mean? It's an absolute necessity at this point. Everyone else is going to be doing it, so you're going to be competing for their attention. I kind of look at it that way. If you want people to listen to your song, you got to compete with them paying the bills that day, driving to work, them doing this, and you want their attention, then you got to get it on as many places as you can. So I think it's vital. It's necessary. There are bands that are way better at it than others. We would like to get better at it ourselves. We're doing, you know, what we know how to do, I guess. But yeah, it's absolutely vital to making any success for yourself, I think, in the entertainment world, generally speaking.
You don't have to talk about this, just a question. We talked to Chris Robertson of Blackstone Cherry last year, and we got onto the subject of depression and suicide. he's been touched by it in his life. I know that you've talked about it. You're also a veteran. You were in 7 years, if that's correct.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Navy. Thank you. And Philly, thank you, if yeah, I walk you. Out, thank you so much. And just an amazing story there. But I live in Philly. There was a tremendous number of homeless vets in the city. They're out there as I speak right now, though. They're right outside where I work. It's out of control. I mean, what do you think needs to change with mental health in this country? What do you think needs to change with that stigma and people getting help, especially folks like yourself who are suffering maybe from PTSD and things like that?
Yeah. Well, one thing I can tell you, like with the veteran community, when a lot of things that hit us, I think, is when you get out, so you're surrounded by your friends 20 deep for however many years you're in. And then as soon as you get out, that community goes. And when you come into, you know, whatever community you go into, now it's this hodgepodge of people who hate each other over one political thing or this other political thing. And nobody really feels like they have the community they used to have. You know, and so that, you know, everything about mental health, I think, is about resilience. It's, you know, there's no cure to it. You build your resilience, build your wall up. And you take away community, that's a really hard way to do it. So especially if you're now homeless and you have a stigma about you already, your community has just went to nothing. You know, so people have to build that back up. I'm not the guy to have all the answers to it, but I think that's one of the biggest missing pieces for a lot of people. It's just that lack of community, friendship, feeling a part of something, having a purpose, you know?
Yeah. Have you been able to connect with other like veterans? I mean, through music, I mean, has that been something that has helped you connect? And if so, what's that been like?
Well, like I always play the guitar and sang, you know, while we're in the Navy, everybody, you know, is like, play the guitar, play it, monkey man, do it. You know what I mean? Like, get to it. You know, so you were almost forced to entertain. So yeah, definitely that helped to engage me into that community a lot because I was always playing for people, you know, and people like that. So music-wise, I haven't met a lot of veteran musicians that I've had the pleasure to like tour with or play with or something like that. I'd like to see more of that. I'd love to. I'd love to get on a USO thing or do something like that. That would be awesome. You know, get around, see Europe and go tour for and play with some basses or something. That'd be awesome. Definitely. I'd love to do more. We'd love to do more for really the veteran community. We just need those opportunities to pop up where we can, you know, be of assistance. We try to usually Memorial Days, things like that. We're trying to donate things to certain organizations through our merch and things like that. But we definitely like to do more than we are.
Yeah. Would you like to see though a solution in the military with some kind of mental health, relief after you serve? Do you think that needs to be more importance needs to be placed on that?
I think that would be good. We have an apparatus like that within the VA, but there were a lot of issues with the VA, you know.
I've heard that
came about. Yeah. So connectivity, you know, do you have somewhere local you could go? In some cases, like I live kind of out in a more rural area, so you have to drive 2.5 hours to get to the closest VA hospital.
Yeah.
Things like that. So there's access issues. There's, and then people, especially more elderly veterans, you have transportation issues. There's a lot of things to go into it, I think. But that would be awesome if there was more funding or whatever it was to make sure these people had access and had the way to get to places and were just looked after a little more. You know, when you were in the military, nobody would let you, you know, you couldn't be different. You couldn't be these things because somebody's going to be right there, you know, talking to you. So it was a little, once you get out, then there's got to be something in place, you know,
I think so. Is it the military is sort of one kind of brotherhood, right? You know, and a band's kind of a brotherhood too. Are there similarities in that?
Oh, absolutely. I think to me, it's basically the same thing. It's different, but it's the same thing. You get the same thing out of it. I even put touring to being like being on deployment. Like it's kind of the same thing. You know, you're just riding around, hurry up and wait. And then, you know, you get this 10 minutes of glory, you know, when you get to play the show. But you're rolling around with your good friends. You know, things are tough, things are joyous. You know, you get the whole nine yards. You know, you're out of your comfort zone, you're being pushed yourself, you know, so it's good. It keeps your mind, you know, from veering down the wrong path. Yeah.
Yeah. You got some dates coming up, so you got to be fired up for that.
We are. We have about 3 months touring coming up between August and September. So we're definitely looking forward to that. Definitely looking forward to the album coming out and just hitting the road and seeing what happens.
Yeah, man.
Oh, that's awesome.
Tell us. Oh, sorry. Sorry, Shane. Didn't mean to cut you off. No. These delays. talk about the artwork for Any Given City, the War Within. I mean, it looks like an ancient society kind of logo kind of thing, you know, maybe different religions, different organizations, you know, but there's something cool going on. Like, how did that come about? Were you guys involved in the artwork and on that?
Yeah. So actually I can almost take zero credit for this. This is all our guitarist, Mike Connor. He has, he's a real artsy guy. He thinks about these kinds of things a lot. It's really there's a lot of in-depth symbolism and stuff in there that he used. It's got like inside there in like Greek, it says the different seven deadly sins that each band member feels like most affects them. There's like our own, like our astrological signs in there, like all kinds of stuff that just talks about each member going around that circle of stuff. I wish he was here to tell you. He could tell you every little detail of it. But
it's a great logo. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great logo. Just stands out. What this is kind of like a question du jour. We've been asking because it's kind of popped up a couple months ago. What are your thoughts on the AI and creeping into the music industry? Is that, or does that even matter to you?
Yeah, I don't know because it's like, what are you gonna do? Like, I don't even know what do you do with it, you know? At this point, I guess there'd have to be a whole lot of laws that have to get put out to make sure that human beings are, you know, good to go. But like, yeah, if you can make a Drake song and put this Drake, make the money, like, yeah, there's so many questions. Yeah. It's like, if it makes it good, if it's good for everybody, then fine. If it's not, which it probably won't be, you know, we probably shouldn't do that. I feel like it's not art if it's not coming from a human being, right? It's not, you know what I mean? It's just crap. You know, it's just some fake stuff. So
no soul. Yeah.
I'd rather not see that happen. I get the business wanting that to happen of music. I do get that. You know, you don't have to pay a band now. You just pay an AI. You buy an AI and just make a bazillion hit songs, whatever.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound great. That's going to come down to the consumer stopping that. You know what I mean? We refuse to buy AI music. You know, that's the easiest way to stop that.
Yeah, it's pretty
going
wild.
It's going on a bit in Hollywood. The writers are a little concerned about it, but it's like, really? We're going to go to computer-generated scripts now? You got to be kidding me. It's already bad enough.
And I think when Anthony Bourdain passed away, you know, wasn't there like a part of that documentary they did on him where they did his voice via AI? I mean, that's happened in some movies too. I mean, stuff like, what's going to happen if an actor passes away mid-performance or something, you know, mid-shooting of a film? I don't know. It's weird. It's really weird stuff. Paul McCartney, right? I mean, the Beatles song. Yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah, that's coming out soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't say this is an issue that I ever thought anybody was going to be dealing with in the music business. You know what I mean?
Right.
Even 2 years ago.
Right.
Never crossed my mind. Yeah. It's nuts.
Yeah. So tell you, you guys, you're hitting the road. You got the big show coming up. We just talked about the one, you know, going out there with, you know, Saliva and Everclear and so many other bands, Adelita's Way. I mean, what are you looking forward to, man? As you guys continue to play shows, like, what's kind of, you know, how excited? You got to be pumped to know.
Oh, definitely. We know that this tour is going to be really good. There's a lot of great venues on the tour. We expect it to sell out or pack pretty much every day. So it's going to be really awesome. It's a great time of year too, when you're sleeping in a bus.
Yeah.
September, October, much better than August or July. So we always like the fall tours generally. I mean, we're really stoked about what's coming out. Absolutely. Yeah,
awesome. Now, will that tour extend? Will you probably pick up more dates as you're going on, you know, based on the record?
There's some dates that have been added to that tour. Based on the record, we may jump on another one. As far as I know, that's the entire tour in its inception to end that we'll be on for that Saliva Drowning Pool. But
War Within, the album, in stores August 4th. Oh, man. so cool. That's just wicked cool. Anything else you guys like to add at all?
I mean, we hit a lot of it. Definitely keep telling people to please hit us up on all the streaming sites. You know, pre-orders are available for the album right now, coming out August 4th, as we said. Please hit those up. We love it when you hit the pre-order. That's awesome for us. Definitely check us out on our headlining tour with Shallow Side, Simple Side tour in August. And then September through October, Drowning Pool Saliva, Adelita's Way. And we hope to see you out there, man.
Yeah, is it kind of surreal this is happening? The record's coming out. You're actually going to be able to hold it in your hand.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. I was like, we'll just never make an album. We'll have 42 singles. You know what I mean? Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen here? No, it's pretty awesome. It's been a long time coming. So it's a little surreal.
Right on.
Yeah. Well deserved, man. Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, man.
Appreciate you.
Kick some ass.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much for joining us, dude. Really appreciate you, Vic.
Definitely. Thank you guys for having me. Absolutely.